impact of computers and the internet. On the other hand, there is the economic crisis that again is forcing a re-engineering of all institutions and a realignment of priorities in this new age of global competition. This symposium is a recognition and celebration of the university motto, learning and labor. This was originally designed for the agricultural and industrial stage of this society in the 19th and 20th centuries. And now we raise it again in the new age of the new digital technologies of the 21st century. Over these 2 days, we will have two foci. Today, our focus is on how the university is engaged in service and research in the local African American community. And tomorrow, we will hear from the community about how they are thinking about entering this new information age with the added power of broadband, really fast internet. And we encourage everyone to join in this discussion. When have we had the opportunity to be accountable as university-based researchers and campus-based activists to answer to the community we serve and study? This is the challenge and opportunity we have today, a campus community dialogue about university-based research and service projects. The times ahead will be a budget nightmare that will lead to choices that unfortunately may ignore morality and standards for social justice. Our commitment must be to keep the university and the community connected in mutually beneficial ways, and that the community have a major say in defining this relationship. Again, we thank you for coming and invite you to be full participants in this symposium. Now I have the opportunity to introduce Steve Zonka, who will bring our symposia opening remarks. He's a University of Illinois Vice President for Public Engagement, a professor of agricultural management. He was the first to hold the soybean industry chair in agricultural strategy. And those of you who are not familiar with agriculture, soybeans are really, really important. A co-founder of the Center Consulting Group in Savoy, Illinois, he was a partner there for more than 20 years. In other words, he's a veteran of this environment. An economist reared on an Iowa family farm, his scholarship emphasizes strategic change and decision making. An author or co-author of over 200 publications, his international experiences include consulting and lecturing on every continent except Antarctica. And the rumor has it he's headed there. He has been a veteran of CCNET, which is a early organization for initiating the application of computers and the internet to the business and civic life of our community. And so in that sense, he's a longtime veteran leading into the UC2B moment. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce Steve Zonka.
I've got
lots of stuff here to deal with. Okay. So I hope the mic is on. Sounds like it's on. Good. It's a pleasure to be here. If I could just find a client to pay my way to Antarctica, I'd be happy to. And so if any of you have, you know, a need for an ag economist to talk about anything in Antarctica, I'll be happy to do it. I want to thank Noah and Abdul for giving me the chance to visit a bit this morning, and thank Gislas and John in the back of the room for hosting this important symposium both today and tomorrow, and the Salem Baptist Church and the Office of Equal Opportunity and Access for their support of this effort as well. I'm going to visit with you for just a few minutes, and I'll give you the main message so you can continue to check your Blackberries. the notion is, As I've traveled around the world, and as a farm boy in Iowa, I never dreamed I'd end up in a career that would end up where I've achieved permanent platinum status on American Airlines, which is 2.5 million miles. But one of the things you find as you travel around the world, or at least I found, is the respect and admiration that folks have around the world for U.S. universities and the way that U.S. universities have helped over the last 100, 150 years transform society. We have real smart people and we do great research, but what's really unique about the U.S. university experience in society is its transformative role. That's based on research and teaching, but it's really because we've figured out, and some people figured out 100 and some years ago, how to harness the knowledge we learn through engagement to drive the future knowledge that we create. That's kind of the secret sauce of the U.S. university. Started with the land grants. I have to say now, today, you can find prestigious private schools, you can find publics who aren't land grant, who have very successful engagement activities. So in some ways, we set the standard, and which has been followed. And I'm going to start out with a little bit of going backwards. Let's see, will this... There it went. Pointed at Noah. Yeah, there we go. And then he moves the lever. So this is the University of Illinois, 1867. Out here on the muddy outpost on the prairies, the good news is there was nothing to obstruct you from horizon, seeing the horizon. You can see a little Green Street, what is now Green Street, and the building called the Elephant, which is in fact the first building. And as I understand the political dealings, the community offered to build that building, and that's how come we have the University of Illinois and it isn't in Bloomington or other places, is we just offered to pay more money. So pay to play is a long tradition in Illinois politics. As a land-grant university, we began applying our research to problems of societal importance to make our research stronger, our teaching better, and our community of better places to live. We are a land-grant university. We were started in the 1860s. That set about the teaching mission, but then a little bit later there was something called the Hatch Act, which provided a research foundation, and then in the early, about 1914, something called the Smith-Lever Act that created extension. At this time, much of society and much of the economy was agricultural. So the focus was on agriculture and then on the mechanical arts, because that's how you could transform the economy and society at that time. And that's what the land-grant university was about. Land-grant university wasn't just about come and do good research or come and teach students. We had a lot of universities at that time in the 1860s that were excellent teaching universities in the realm of the classical university. At this time, folks said, we want something different. We want solid academics. We don't want vocational schools as university, but we want to be able to apply what we learn and learn from what we apply. And that's kind of the secret. And so we started out with this in agriculture. This is not me. Actually, this is me. And so on the left-hand side of those three young children is me holding our rabbits, which was a one-year experiment, and clearly we didn't ask the extension agent about the viability of the rabbit enterprise, because it didn't work. But even as about that age, I remember going to extension meetings with my dad and talking about the agronomic opportunities. What I didn't realize at the time was that the glory of this system was that what we were saying to the extension agent was going back to Iowa State University in Ames. The interesting thing about this picture, this machine in the background may be why I left farming, because you shoveled grain in here and it came out this spout in a wagon, and then you shoveled it another time. And so my view of farming was lots of shoveling. The interesting thing about Photoshop these days is, what is this cat doing here? I don't understand that. We had lots of cats on the farm, and there was just a random cat that decided to sit there. But that was kind of central to my upbringing, and as I came here and I joined the College of Agriculture, and again, as I traveled around the world, I found lots of countries had agricultural extension systems because people had come here, had seen in agriculture what it had done, and said, oh, well, we need an agricultural extension service, but they didn't have the kind of transformative effect on agriculture that we had seen in the U.S. And this puzzled me, and it puzzled me because a lot of what I've done in terms of consulting and in terms of research is about how do we make decisions and how do we get knowledge flowing to create innovation. That was one of the things I was really interested in. And that caused me to do a lot of work trying to read and understand knowledge creating systems. And this is the general message. This is not specific to agriculture. Just real quick, I want to suggest that there are two kinds of knowledge. There's what is called explicit knowledge. And generally, explicit knowledge is what we can write down. Okay? And we can pass it around from person to person, and it's equations in textbooks. It's journal articles that only faculty love. But there's another kind of knowledge, and that's tacit knowledge. And that's the kind of knowledge my dad was real good at. It was the thing, he could walk in the barn and know something was wrong. I didn't know what was going on, but he knew because it was based on his observation, his experience. One of the classic stories in the world of knowledge creating is the Matsushita Company. And Matsushita was the first company that wanted to create a bread-making machine. And they studied and they studied, then they hired engineers to watch elite bread makers in international hotels in Tokyo. And they watched and they watched and they watched, and they did prototypes, and they couldn't get it to work. So finally they said to a young engineer, become a baker. And this young engineer became an apprentice baker in one of these shops and worked at it. And finally, after about 6 months, she figured out there was a point where you twist the bread and you just do it because that's what you do, or the dough, not more than the bread. And that was the secret of what they had to put in the bread maker. And this notion of how in a system do we energize, do we advance knowledge creation is one of the keys to this notion of knowledge creation, and I'm going to talk about a knowledge spiral. As academics, we like to think about analysis, okay? So students read the text, allegedly. We give them tests, and we see how that works. We do research, we write it in journal articles, and people read them, and that's the world of explicit knowledge where we as faculty are comfortable. My dad and the bread maker lived out here, in the world of observation, experience. How do we apply these things? What many people copied in the Ag Extension Service was kind of this. How do we take explicit knowledge and move it here? What they didn't copy was this part. The part about what we learned out here was actually what were really good questions. And it was the questions that drove the research. And this then leads to something called the knowledge spiral, which I would argue is the key to the transformative role of the U.S. research university in transforming society. It is this continual linkage. It is faculty from GISLIS who work in the community. It's faculty in engineering who work in corporations and with Engineers Without Borders. It's that process, and the process is about doing good, and I'm sure we're going to hear over the next 2 days about really good things that have happened from this side, but what really I'm going to argue is really critical of the success over time of the system is what we learned this way. Used to be we learned about questions. Increasingly, as society has changed and more knowledge is being created out here, I'd argue we're learning a lot about answers as well as questions in today's society to drive our future research. So we mentioned CCNET, and CCNET was a real good example in my life of this knowledge spiral. It was an innovation in about the 1990s when this thing called the Mosaic and this thing called the Internet came around. One of my teenage friends the other day said, what was life like before broadband? How did you work like that? Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago. But CCNET was a kind of a joint venture between the university and the community and the Chamber of Commerce, and the issue was Larry Smarr, who was director of NCSA at that time, challenged the community and said, there's going to be big stuff happening out of this thing called the internet, but we just don't know what it is. And it led to a number of innovations, White House recognition, some magazine, National Magazine, had us as one of the 10 most advanced technology cities in the world. But it drove real things from happening in our schools, bringing ISDN to town. Cyber Farm is something, a group that I was involved in, worked with, which really kind of defined the future of information and agriculture, both locally and throughout. And it only worked because faculty and students and staff were sitting, in our case, which was the ag research group, we got together once a month and we just learned from each other. And if we were real lucky, somebody would buy us breakfast. And that was a good thing. And this worked very well. And then as we became more knowledgeable, our issues were resolved and we kind of let CCNET go away. I'm going to talk a little, and a lot of this, the point is, where it was about discovering opportunity. Today, and we'll see a video in a little bit that's going to mention CCNET, because we a group in the community and the university are working to advance CCNET around sustainability and topics of today. We're trying to, in many ways, and I know you're going to hear from some of the projects we were funded in our first seed funding grant program. Last year, we had 140 submissions, could award 30. We had many times that were worthy, we just didn't have money. This year, we have about 80 applications, and the review process is going on right now. I want to show, though, and this is, Noah flipped me over to a little bit of video of some of the projects from the words of the people involved in the projects. These are not projects you're going to hear about later today on purpose. We're going to go to YouTube, I guess. Yep, anytime you are.
So the residents were facing, you know, flooding issues that in a lot of situations resulted in flooded basements, flooded backyards. In some situations, the storm water sewer actually overflowed into the sanitary, so they would have a backup of a combined sanitary storm into their basements. As I look back through what the city and steering committee had hoped for us to achieve, we've really gotten through a lot of that list. We have engaged and educated the community and the city, I think, about some possibilities that are out there, and also started to show them in real physical terms what these alternative solutions might look like.
There's lots of things to do in this exhibit. The kids can go on a mission where they'll try to figure out why there's a power outage. They'll understand why they occur, as well as figuring out the solution for restoring power. There's a lot of fun costuming and activity and missions. So it's a very active exhibit. And then there's a lot of opportunities for parents really just to play with their kids and interact and get excited about this very important aspect of our lives.
CCNET is a countywide organization focused on convening conversations about the many dimensions of sustainability. It is about learning and creating shared understanding of the issues that face our community.
To me, CCNET is a community operative which allows us to be able to network, to be able to bring together resources within the community that we wouldn't normally have an opportunity to network with.
This is the second year of production for the student farm. we have 3 30 by 96 high tunnels now that we're going to utilize for year-round production. The student farm is actually a smaller part of this larger farm, which is an 80-acre farm. This is the crop sciences, fruit research, pomology research farm. All of the produce from the farm goes to the dining hall services, catering, and pretty much all their catering in the dining halls or special events that they have on campus. Last year we brought approximately 20,000 pounds of produce into to the dining hall units, which we grossed about $30,000 to $35,000 from that.
Okay. The unifying theme, I think, across those is the notion of good things happening in the community, but good things happening back here at the university. Our students being affected, our faculty being affected, what we learn, what we teach, what we learn being affected by what we do. Again, this leads to transformation, and just a couple more slides, and one thing I want to talk about, which we've already talked a little bit about, is UC2B, which I think is one of the most exciting opportunities for the community and the university. And I think you'll hear more about it. I've had the pleasure to work just a little bit with Mike and Abdul on this project, and I applaud their vision and their tenacity to overcome difficulties. The opportunity here is not just, in my mind, the opportunity here is not just about having high-speed access in our institutions and in a part of the community. Our real opportunity is, what can we do to drive further change? What can we learn from having this capability? How can that affect us here in the university? How can we learn how to learn better? That's where we'll really be successful. If 10 or 15 years from now, this has had a transformative effect in the community, it's because we've been able to integrate it with faculty interested in child development or family studies, or people from urban planning interested in how the cities can operate more effectively with this. That's where our big opportunity will be to affect not just us, but to affect the broader society as well. We're working hard. Oh, I want to back up just a little bit about CCNet. I was mentioned there. One of the things we're learning is this thing called the internet, it kind of changed things. Our old vision of CCNet in the 90s was we got together once a month and had breakfast. We have, and my staff person had to leave, but we probably have 30 videos of things going on in the community, and we've had somewhere over 4,000 hits. So the technology is really changing how we communicate, and we're learning how to do that and how to advance that. There is a website for CCNet, and if you Google CCNet, you'll find it, and there's opportunities there to get involved in various enterprises. We want to continue to grow our engagement activities, both in terms of seed projects, but then communication with the community. This will be, I think, our third public engagement symposium. Will be March 9th at the iHotel. I'll be featuring a lot of the things that faculty, students, and people in the community have been working on. We just recently announced a public engagement portal, which is at engage.illinois.edu. One of the, in a way, sad things is how much goes on here at the university that would be valuable to people in the community that we just don't know about. And so we're trying to make that, and again, using technology allows us to do that. We've actually had the site in kind of beta testing for the last almost 2 years. In that time, there's been 4,600 programs featured there. You may or may not have noticed in the newspaper, old technology. There was an article just recently about sort of the launch. We've been having about 2,500 hits a month, even before we kind of announced it was real. I think currently we have 900 entries of events coming up at the university that might have appeal, have value to people in the community. So let me just conclude. Getting a hold of us is very easy in today's world. Email, phone, all those things. We have a listserv where we're continually sending out information on events. Facebook page, YouTube page. You can tell there are people younger than me that work in my office, which is what's necessary. And it's exciting. And we Abdul mentioned challenges and change. The thing, as we struggle with the financial difficulty, is we can't lose, in my opinion, sort of some of these key precepts of what made the U.S. Research University, what made the University of Illinois a place that not just did outstanding research and taught thousands of students, but helped transform society in ways that we're all beneficiaries of. And it's this linkage of engagement, whatever we call it, outreach, extension, what service, whatever we call it. It's that linkage that informs the research and teaching mission that is, in fact, the thing that will help us, and that's something we'll work hard to continue. And I will say, I want you to know that there's a feeling that's broadly shared in the administration. We still have to deal with budget issues, but there's strong belief in the land grant model of research, teaching, and engagement. With that, I'd like to looking forward to the rest of the morning here in the conversation and. Looking forward to participate, and I think I'll conclude and let us get on with that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's always good to hear good words from up top. We are really trying to use this as a context for doing something, not just talking about it. But it's important that we think in terms of getting on the same page. In other words, conversation has to lead to some kind of consolidation of a point of view, and then on that basis we can go forward. And so we've sort of, as a process, come up with this document I want to read, and we're putting this forward to you in hopes of getting your signature as the basis for starting a movement, a campaign, a petition drive in the community so we can get people on the same page. We know that this technology means something, but we have to understand that the stimulus bill had in it $7 billion that targets, in quotes, and this is in the legislation and in the directive from Washington, the vulnerable populations. Now, the people in this room have no problem decoding that and understanding who the vulnerable populations are. The problem is the vulnerable populations are mostly asleep when it comes to this new reality. Now, everybody here knows what illiteracy meant for your grandparents. It meant not being able to read and write your own name. And nobody wanted to be an X maker. People concealed being an X maker. Today, our community is full of X makers. And many of them don't even know it. That's how deep it is. If you want to get a job at Walmart or at McDonald's, you got to go online to get the application. This is a real change that's already happened. I don't talk to bank clerks anymore. I interact with a machine. Now, I know there's people behind the machine, but I get my money from a machine most of the time. So I want to read this because we're looking for unity around this. We dedicate ourselves to become difference makers. An information revolution is underway, leading global transformation in health, education, business, culture, and in the diverse activities of our daily lives. This revolution cannot and will not bypass any underserved or low-income community. Every person and every neighborhood is impacted and therefore challenged to act. We rely on cyber democracy, collective intelligence, and information freedom. Cyber democracy means universal access. Every person and every community organization being able to make full use of the new technologies. Collective intelligence means hearing all voices, all of us, uploading as well as downloading information. information freedom means online information is findable, costs nothing, and requires no special permission to access. We're talking the public library here. With these values, we will work together so all our communities and community organizations can communicate, represent themselves online, and use digital technology to create cyber power for social change. We'd like everybody to think about this and to sign it so we can then take it out to our community, get every organization to sign this. But now we have three responses, three people to initiate the conversation. We have two people. We have Reverend Bogan, who represents Salem Baptist Church. He's also a representative on the policy committee representing the community and UC2B. We also have a representative of the city council here from Champaign, William Kiles, who's going to speak on behalf of the elected officials and the community. And then lastly, we have Kate Williams, who's an assistant professor here at Gislas at the University of Illinois, who is one of the faculty members in community informatics, whose students are active in the community. So I'd just like to turn it over to Reverend Bogan, Congressman Kiles, and Kate Williams.
Well, just ahead of your time.
2012 is coming.
Yeah, just go on the table then.
Why not?
I think you're first.
Good morning. I bring greetings to Stephen Zlanka. It's good to know that we have persons who are definitely interested in what we're doing and how things are going. I extend these greetings to the Black leaders and to others and to the guests that are here. I'm honored to be called to make responsive comments on behalf of the Northeast Side community. My major remarks regard the university's continued resources commitment to the community. Two of the most important reasons for the university to commit its resources to the Northeast community are, one, a community in need of help, and two, the need for classrooms and research labs. The University of Illinois is not only one of the most prestigious in the world, it is also parent to two of the world's largest and most sophisticated computers, which overshadows a community. In this shadow of prestige and knowledge is a community that is in need of help. Help in the unification of the community through jobs, education, dialogue, financial support, and communications. Help with these issues will keep the community abreast of the exponential growth in the information technology arena. Although the university has been offering help in some areas, there are still some things the university can do to make sure that resources are going to the places they are intended, such as establishing set-aside programs that helps the community with jobs, contract opportunities of employment, and education. Set-aside programs that ensure dialogue to foster greater relations between the university and the community. There should not be any such thing as a University Avenue borderline between the University of Illinois and the community. The University of Illinois is part of the community, not a separate island by itself. It is evident that when the community suffers, the university suffers, and when the university suffers, the community suffers. By continuing to allocate resources into the community, it can only shore up the university and enhance better living conditions through dialogue for all. Set-aside programs that financially support nonprofit organizations which foster economic empowerment through communications, networking, and education. The second important reason is the need for community classrooms and research labs. The University of Illinois has played a major role in helping to set up classrooms and research labs such as Salem Baptist Church Computer Lab. Throughout the community, These classrooms and all research labs, which mainly consist of computers, are just a part of some of the networking and collaboration the community needs to help bridge the digital divide. However, there must be more. Every farmer knows that once the seeds are planted and the harvest is taken in, the work is still not done. It is now time to prepare the field for the next planting season to come. Therefore, even though these computer labs have been planted throughout the community, there must be applications of curriculum installed in these computer labs or classrooms that will benefit the community through educational use. The time to prepare the field for the next growing generation season is now. The students of today are not like the students of yesterday, my generation. The need for applications of curriculum in order to stimulate and keep their attention is well, and very much needed. When I was growing up, I was introduced to computers. There were no emphasis on the need to possess, understand, or operate computers. This was done by the brains in the college or the big businesses such as IBM. Nevertheless, the children of today will not be introduced to computers. They will be raised with computers as it becomes a second nature to them and as part of their rearing. When I was growing up, I did not have the opportunity to learn anything about computers because that was reserved for those who were in higher education, which was not afforded to us. In addition, like most people of that time, we did not have computer equipment available to us. Now, with computer equipment readily available and accessible, compared to our children of today who have the opportunities normally to learn about computers as they grow, may my experience seem as though it was 100 years ago, but I know that I'm not that old. No way. So why is there such a digital divide between our community, the university, and the world? We must make partnerships in order to bridge this digital divide. We seek a partnership with this symposium, this eBlack CU project, and your Office of Public Engagement is a good start. We seek a partnership that will help us with the applications which, powered by UC2B, will help the community in need. We seek a partnership that eliminates the shadow of the University of Illinois and illuminates the community with its light. We seek a partnership that will continue to help the classrooms and research labs by empowering them with applications of curriculum that enlightens and educates. We seek a partnership with the University of Illinois that bridges the digital divide in computer technology and develops a lasting community relationship on all levels of dialogue. The University of Illinois has already made one gigantic partnership that proves it is part of the community. The partnership between the City of Urbana, the City of Champaign, and the University of Illinois, which is known as UC2B, will become the beacon of greater relationships throughout our community. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Will Kyles. I am a City of Champaign Council member for District 1, and I was asked to speak about the needs of the community and how the university could play a pivotal role. I'll start off, I think we all know the needs. We've talked about them for many years, probably decades, maybe even, you know, centuries. But I'll go over a couple of them. I would say the effective use of technology. The effective use of technology, meaning that kids are already using it. Kids are using cell phones. They're using computers. They have laptops. They have iPads. Kids are using this right now. What we need to do, in my opinion, is figure out a way how we get them to use the whole phone. To understand that, okay, it's not just about texting, it's about emails. How do we get them to understand the transactions of everyday business through the simple use of a phone? I think that it's the effective use of technology that will help our children of tomorrow. We know we need jobs. We know we need job training, after school programs, expansion of recidivism programs, inclusive Illinois, I'm gonna get this wrong, Illinois, www.inclusiveillinois.edu talks about recidivism and how the university actually has a small program that helps prison inmates. I didn't know that, but that getting that knowledge and getting that information. One of my jobs is to be a communicator, and so I look and I research and I find things that you know, often are not necessarily communicated as well. We need to get the message out, like was said earlier, we need to get the message out about the good things that are happening and the great things that are occurring, because just the community doesn't know about them. That's just the reality. I think that access is one of the most important needs of our community. I think that at every grade level, the teacher should start off with the saying, "I am. My name is Mrs. or Mr. So and so. I am preparing you to go to the next level, whether that's fourth grade, fifth grade, with the ultimate goal that you'll go to college, or some type of skill training, vocational school." I think that that's important, because then you give the student some type of understanding of what your purpose is and why the student is there. I think that purpose and the understanding of purpose in schools will help this relationship. When I talk about access, the last thing I'll say about that is I really believe that kids need to know that they are smart enough to go to college. And that sounds like a really basic idea, but the reason why I'm giving basic ideas, because we are struggling financially. So I'm setting up this dialogue and my portion to talk about things that we can do with the money that we have, because I realize that we're under budget constraints. You have to tell a kid from the beginning, you are eligible, or you can be eligible to go to the University of Illinois. When you start planting that seed of empowerment in their head, that changes. When I was younger, and my mom would tell me that I would be successful, and everyone in my family told me that I would be successful. When I wasn't successful, and there was a period when I didn't feel successful, it were those words of empowerment that kept me striving forward. Every day, I mean, God definitely talks to me and helps me and deals with me. But when people elevate you, when we elevate our youth, people call me congressman, even though I'm city council member. But they were calling me those type of things before I was even elected. When you start planting those seeds or those ideas in a person's head, you change the way they act. You change their outcome. So now you strive harder for something different. So again, when I tell you, when you say tell a kid that they're eligible to go to college, then you're going to change the way they may study a little bit harder, because that's an idea that they never had. And now that you've given them that seed of empowerment, they'll figure out a way to go after it. How can the university be involved and elevate their role? We have to change our outreach approach. Typically, you know, I'm an outreach coordinator for the Congressman Tim Johnson. That's also a job that I do. Typically, outreach positions, and we meet in circles, or we meet in groups that we're familiar with, that the person before me met with, but instead of going down that same route, we have to take those services directly to the people. I believe that there's an underserved community, but then I think there's an underreached community. I think there are grant dollars and dollars already out there and that have already been identified, but the people that are, for lack of better words, the people on the block, or the people that hang out, those people don't know about those programs. So we have to have people that are willing to go face-to-face and say, hello, my name is so-and-so. My name is Will Kyles. I work for this. And here's let me talk to you about a program. I think that we think that some people are unapproachable. They really are not that unapproachable. One of the things that kind of startled me, I received an email of a YouTube video, and there is a local gang. They were doing a freestyle and marketing their gang. They were marketing their gang. And at first, I'm looking at this is crazy. Are you asking the police to just say, all right, lock me up, my name is so-and-so? I'm thinking of this in my head. But then after I look at the video, the guy leaves his email address. So really I'm thinking like, what is going on? After I took a deeper look, I thought about the guy that left his email address. And I said, what if this guy is using this technology right here. He wasn't using a video camera, he was using a phone, and he posted it on YouTube. So obviously he knows about technology. He understands the use of it. Now, this may not be the effective use of it, but he understands the use of it. And then he leaves an email address. That's marketing. So now I'm trying to figure out, how do I take this young man and use the opportunity, take negativity, because it was a negative video, and find opportunity. Those are the type of things that we can do. It doesn't cost a lot of money. And as I say, I'm trying to frame my words around things that don't cost a lot of money. Years ago, when the university's African American enrollment was the highest, there were grant dollars for recruitment. That's what it was. We had money that we specifically went out and we recruited African Americans. That's just the reality. If you don't put that out there, if you don't put your calling card out there with your email on it, you're not going to get that in type of engagement. Also, the need when you go out and actually recruit, you tell a young child you can. It talks about that access. You can be a part of this institution. I think that there's a need to continue to form collaborations where the university works directly with Unit 4 to change curriculum. One of the things that I've heard university officials from not only the university but Parkman, kids are not prepared to go to school. And so I'm thinking like, okay, they spent 13 years in school. How are they not prepared to school? How can a kid go through K through 12 and not understand 1 plus 1 or 1 plus 1 times 1 divided by 1 to the exponent of 2? I don't understand that. So I think that there's an opportunity for the university to come in and say, when a kid comes in, and to continue to reinforce that, messages need to be reinforced. It's not that it probably isn't being said. They need to be reinforced. So we go and say, all right, this is what we want. A student A, B, C, D, and E, when they come to the university, when they come to Parkland, this is what they need to be doing. This is the level that they need to be at. Because, as we said, resources are low. And, why should a student spend their financial aid dollars on classes that they should have already known K through 12? That's what's happening. So you burn up all your financial aid, and then you can't complete the rest of your course. That's one of the reasons why we can't retain African Americans on campus as well. They're burning all their money up on classes that they should have learned K through 12. So that means that we need to go back but the university continue to say, hey, this is what needs to be done. This is what needs to be taught. And we can work with those relationships with our local schools. The last thing I'll say is that we need to effectively market majors in technology, agriculture. When someone told me about agriculture, the first thing you think about is farming, but you don't think about the possibilities that go with it. There's more than just farming. There's one example, Kraft Foods. You're testing the quality of working in quality. You're testing the quality of the product that goes out to the consumer every day. We need to educate people on that. And lastly, I'll reinforce it by saying we need to realize that children, youth are the people that are the most we perceive as unapproachable, are very approachable. The guy came out with a YouTube video. If that's not, doesn't leave an impression on you, this guy understands the use of this phone. He also understands the use of marketing, business as well. How do we transform that? And I will end my comments there.
I'm going to stand up because there's some other people that I'm going to ask to stand up in a moment. Thank you, Noah, for giving me a moment to affirm community informatics. Those of us here at GISLIS think that community informatics is one of the keys to the land-grant mission of the 21st century. Community informatics studies how local and historical communities use and can use information technology. So we're really at the foundation of things. The community is the foundation of society. This means learning from and contributing to local communities in very much that spiral that I hope you all, students in my class, got down, that we were presented with this morning. This semester, there are 31 graduate students in community informatics here on campus that are working with the following 13 institutions in town: Bethel Church, the Metanoia Center, the Center for Women in Transition, the Church of the Brethren, Boys and Girls Club, Douglas Branch Library, Salem Church, the Champaign County Nursing Home, Champaign Public Library, the Developmental Services Center, Dorsey Homes, the Urbana Connections Center, and Urbana Free Library. And then there are 14 more distance students that are working with 14 institutions across the United States and even in Canada through our distance learning program here at the Library Information Science Program. So what I want to do today, which is why I'm standing up, is I want to thank the representative of these organizations that agreed to partner with us and that are here today and tomorrow, and also to recognize the community informatics students who hail not only from GISLIS, the Library Information Science School, but also computer science and educational policy. They are working at their sites this semester, and they are joining us today at eBlackCU because actually coming to this event is very much a part of their learning from the community. So those of you who are able to be here from these organizations and from class, please stand up so everybody can see you and know you. And I don't have more to say because what the class and what the organizations are going to say is going to help make today and tomorrow a really rich dialogue. So thank you all for coming, those of you who stood up and who didn't stand up. And we look forward to talking with you. Thanks.
Well, thank you all very much for a very stimulating beginning to this symposium. We are almost on time, and we've got coffee. And one of the things I want to say as we break for a coffee break, we want to make sure that we really use this opportunity in a community sense. And that is, when you get coffee and you see somebody standing next to you, you don't know, say something. You know, just reach out and shake a hand or say, who are you? And tell them who you are, because we've got to figure out ways to break this campus-community divide. And we can bring the campus and community together, still be a divide. So we got to talk to each other. And then we got to get back in here on time. So it's 10:15, we're supposed to be back. Let's make it 10:20 and 15 minutes. So get some coffee. Sign the manifesto and be back in 15 minutes.